Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Ali Morin is the Vice President of Nursing Informatics at Simpler. She leads their clinical product strategy and ensures that the clinical voice and experience are brought into the product development lifecycle. Ali is a board-certified clinical informatics nurse with more than 20 years of direct and operational healthcare IT experience. Prior to Simpler, she was the Vice President of Nursing Informatics at Halo Health, a clinical informatics manager at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, and a clinical team leader at Boston Children's Hospital. Ali earned her master's degree in nursing informatics from Xavier University, a bachelor's degree in healthcare administration from St. Joseph's College, and a nursing degree from the Christ College of Nursing. Hello, Ali. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hello, Iqbal. How are you?
I am fantastic. And yourself?
I'm good.
Sweet. I heard you've been doing quite a bit of travel lately.
I have. It's good to be back home for a while. I've had the pleasure of doing some conferences. I've had the pleasure of doing some implementations recently. So it's been really good to get back inside the four walls of a hospital and actually see what's been going on.
I love it. And I'm sure that shaking hands, meeting new people, racking up airline and hotel points, there's always a perk to all of it. So I absolutely understand. Ali, I'm so glad that you are on the show today. You were one of my first nursing informatics executives on the show. So intrigued and ready to ask you questions. I'm sure that some of our listeners today are familiar with you. Some may be familiar with myself. Others may be unfamiliar to both of us. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Sure. So I'm Ali Morin. I am the Vice President of Nursing Informatics at Simpler. Simpler is a healthcare operations company. We cover, the fundamentals of operating a healthcare system, from workforce management to ensuring you have enough staff for all the patients, credentialing systems, identifying the doctors, nurses, other healthcare professionals, and their expertise. We really live in, most healthcare systems have an ERP, they have an EMR and, direct care technology, and they have revenue cycle management. Simpler lives in the rest of that space that is filled with us. So you've got workforce management, provider data management, compliance, contract management, spend, access, analytics. I'm sure I'm forgetting a million other ones because we have such a great complement of products that we fill in healthcare operations. And if you don't know who Simpler is, you might know one of our legacy products, which is like API Healthcare, Healthcare Source, Comply Track, Greenlight Medical, Midas, Halo Health, Cactus, Track Manager. So if you don't know the name Simpler, you might know one of those names. We actually are in 9 out of 10 hospitals in America. Now, what my role is at Simpler is to really try to bring the clinical voice and define the clinical workflows from a product perspective and fill the ears of product management with the reasons why technology needs to be beneficial for clinicians and not an additional burden. As we have seen over the last several decades, throw another technology at it to solve the problem. And what do we end up with? The mess we're in right now. So let's really think about what we're adding to the clinicians at the bedside and the administrators and the providers. And let's be thoughtful about how those technologies fit into the day-to-day life of a healthcare system and a healthcare provider. So, you know, I really get to spend a lot of time thinking about what is the gap in our products from a, you know, usability perspective, and really try to bring that clinical voice to the team at Simpler.
And I really appreciate how you've defined that, Ali, because I think that a lot of clinicians and providers that are listening to the show recognize the frustration that most of our colleagues feel. That they've been given a system, a platform, a software tool, and they're expected to utilize it, but the person that's designed it or created it has had zero touch with patients and is looking at it strictly from a technical or an analytical component. And when there is a poor user interface and poor interoperability, then that causes a lot of problems. So I'm glad that you're on this team. I'm glad that you're on the show. I want to take a step back and give some more context to the listeners. You did a great job identifying several of the acquisitions that Simpler has done. And most people are probably not familiar with Simpler unless you're one of those fortunate people that happened to attend HIMSS this past year, where I heard our organization was very well represented in a bright purple all across the conference. Yeah. I saw the pictures. I was one of those very envious people like, well, I'm a part of Simpler too. Yeah. But maybe next year, who knows?
It was fun. We had a good time. It was great to be back in a booth and, you know, selling the Simpler story and telling the story and sharing the vision that we have for healthcare operations. Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it. But you mentioned a couple of statistics that I think are worth calling out again, but also some additional statistics that maybe when people hear it, especially the listeners today, they'll probably resonate a little bit better with Simpler's vision and mission as well. So I know you've talked about Simpler as a company that's, you know, really working as a SaaS, software as a service organization. But over the past 6 years, it's actually had 16 acquisitions, and it has actually in and of itself 30 years of industry experience. So whether you think of products or services that have been deployed in 9 out of 10 hospitals, as you said, I take that one step farther to help the listeners recognize that that's actually 6,000 facilities in the United States, and that's over 5 million healthcare providers that have a touch with a product or service that has a Simpler name to it. And you mentioned several different niches that now belong to Simpler. You mentioned clinical communications, you've mentioned workforce management, but there are many others, including talent acquisition, consulting, and talent management as well. But I think the other piece that's really important for me to say on the show is how clearly Simpler has distinguished itself from some of its competition. When I think about our CEO today, BJ Shaknowski, who is actually now serving on the board of the Susan G. Komen Fund, and he's also part of the DAISY Foundation as an organization as well. Not only that, the awards that Simpler has won over the past 3 years is really a testament to where the quality and the efficiency come in. So there's an organization that is called KLAS, K-L-A-S. We have been very fortunate to have won the best in class for 2021 workforce. I believe it's time and attendance. Also, and this year we won 2 awards, right? The workforce time and attendance, as well as clinical communications, which is a team that you represent. So, you know, when we think about the various aspects, the Simpler universe is what I like to call it. You know, there's so many high points that you may, even though if you don't recognize Simpler, you'll recognize some of these achievements and acquisitions that make us and this organization really, you know, a conversation piece for hospitals and health systems to have. You know, Ali, when I think about, you know, the work that you do, it's kind of unique, right? You know, nursing informatics is, as a whole, is relatively like a new thing, like 20, 30 years old, maybe 30, you know, 35, 40, if you're really specializing in a totally non-healthcare related space. But in the healthcare space, like it's really only started to kind of like find its footing and get its roots. Can you share with the audience today what really is nursing informatics? How does that work? What is the value of having a nursing informatics specialist or a nursing informatics team? How does it benefit providers and, of course, patients at the end?
Sure. So, you know, nursing informatics is relatively new, and I think it came... It's been around for, you're right, 30, 40 years. And it the the boom of nursing informatics came to light when we started implementing EMRs, right? So maybe not, maybe the title wasn't there, but there were many nurses, myself included, who got kind of tapped on the shoulder and said, you know what, you like technology. You're the one that we asked to train about technology. Can you help us, you know, kind of figure out if this piece of paper translates into this in the EMR? And, you know, fundamentally that, you know, HIMSS defines nursing informatics as the specialty, and I'm reading it because I had it up because I want to make sure I got it right and I referenced HIMSS appropriately, but it's the specialty that integrates nursing science with multiple information and analytical sciences to identify, define, manage, and communicate data, information, knowledge, and wisdom in the nursing practice. It's a mouthful, but when you boil it down, it means that I, as a nursing informaticist, am really I'm the clinical voice to technology, right? So I have to know what the evidence says about patient care and be able to translate that into best practices from a technology perspective. I am the one who sits with an engineer or product and says, this is what it needs to do. And they say it can or can't. And then I go back to the clinicians and say it can or can't, you know, and we kind of find the middle ground. So, you know, I live in the in that kind of part of nursing informatics. There's also the data and analytics part of nursing informatics. And those are the, you know, those are the people who take the just terabytes and terabytes of data that we are plunging into an EMR, into every system in a healthcare space today, and they boil it down and they build the analytics models and they look at what are our outcomes? How is what we're putting in translating to outcomes? Is it measurable? Is it impacting patient care? And, you know, I am not the first to say this, but I say it often, right technology for the right person at the right time. And that's really what I try to ground myself in from an informatics perspective is, are we adding the right thing? Is it necessary? Who is it impacting? I mean, we know burnout today is at an all-time peak. Technology is a contributor to burnout. So we as informaticists have to be very mindful of what we're doing. You know, I was aware of this HIMSS study that they did in 2020 where they looked at the nursing informatics profession as a whole. They surveyed about 2,000 of us and they asked kind of what are your job responsibilities? And today it is really about, we're still in the EMR space. We're still implementing and optimizing the EMR. And I don't think that's a surprise to anybody because, you know, there's tons of literature that says 35% of a nurse's time is spent documenting. Well, we've got to cut that back because nurses don't want to do that. None of us went to school to document for, you know, 35% of a 12-hour shift. At least I didn't. You know, so I think nursing informatics is really that clinical voice. There's healthcare informatics, there's clinical informatics, there's biomedical informatics. I mean, the informatics space in healthcare is broad and it's necessary because as we continue to be innovative, because there's many things that are innovative about technology, we just have to be thoughtful about it as well. And I think that's really where nursing informatics comes into play.
I mean, I like your progression, right? Like it's not something that that you woke up with one day and just decided, you know, today I think I'm just going to completely shift away from taking care of patients. And I'm just going to invest the rest of my life working with data and information and being a liaison between, you know, those who know JavaScript and HTML with the people that are going to be using it. It's not something that nobody, you know, you don't wake up with that. And it's very interesting how, you know, as you said, many nursing informatics specialists get tapped on the shoulder because they exhibit a passion for both. And they certainly find themselves in that great space. When I think about what you do today and the team that you support, right? You mentioned on the beginning of the show that you've been traveling quite a bit and that you've been going on site to do implementations and integrations. You know, is there a success story that you'd like to share on this podcast today where you and your team were able to solve a problem for one of your clients? Or maybe you've identified it was a problem that they weren't aware of and how you and your team were able to help focus our resources and people to help resolve that for not only the client, but maybe even for the greater good.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about those types of success stories, I go way back to the beginning of my nursing informatics career, and then I go to the recent days of Halo Health. And, you know, there's been a lot of time in between there. The early success, I think I'm most proud of, this is early 2000s, right? So we had just left paper. We were in the electronic medical record, and it was, hey, we got to get care plans in the chart, right? So care plans historically, not utilized, you know, not really engaging from a nursing perspective and an interdisciplinary perspective, but we figured out a way to build a combination of nursing education, discharge planning, and care planning all in one module in our EMR. And, you know, it didn't work that well on paper. So, you know, we were very proud of the fact that we built it for the acute side, but we had diabetic nurse educators banging on our door saying, how do I get this built for my clinic? We had pharmacy, Iqbal, you'll appreciate this. We had pharmacy saying, how do I get my care plan and education in there, because I'm doing it too. And you as the nurse need to know when I'm done with my medication education so that you can take on the next piece. So when you think about the timing of when that was, you know, interdisciplinary electronic care plans was not there. And so I was really proud that we could do that for our pediatric hospital that I worked at the time, because it really brought the next phase of the EMR together. Now, you know, fast forward 20 years, and I came from the Halo acquisition into Simpler, and Halo is a clinical communication and collaboration platform. I'll do a 30-second plug on what that is, but it's really bringing together role-based communication. So you get all your doctors, all your nurses, enterprise-wide, EVS, you know, transport, nutrition, the phone operators, everybody on one platform to role-based communicate and message through an app, you know, mobile app or on a desktop. And, you know, care can be delivered and discussed through an app. And we also have the ability to integrate VoIP for nurse call and making phone calls. And so it's a unified communication platform, which, to my point earlier about adding more layers of technology, streamlining a bunch of disparate technologies into one is really a win. And, you know, we had a success where we did that and we implemented it in a 17 hospital system, 17 of X. I mean, they have a number more than that, but being able to really transform communication care delivery in a way that was meaningful and have meaningful impact to STEMI times and stroke times. And, you know, we had EVS teams saying, can we get notified when the patient is leaving the OR, because we want to make sure we have the room ready. You know, I mean, you just think about hospital throughput is such, you know, is a term that's thrown around so much, but if you get people on the same communication platform and you're not calling this person and waiting for this person to page you back, and that person happens to be the wrong person, or you call somebody and they're not at their desk and you don't have time. You know, just transforming a health system's communication was a huge success. You know, it was just a great thing to watch and see and hear people say, hear the nurses on the floor say, gosh, it's so much easier to find the doctor on call now. You know, like how simple is that of a statement, but yet so impactful for care delivery?
I think that speaks volume, to be honest with you, Ali. Like, look at how far, you know, hospital management and patient flow has come because of these types of technologies. Or, you know, and again, when you mentioned like VoIP, you know, for the listeners, voice over internet protocol, you know, most people will be familiar with like Microsoft Teams, which is what we use all the time, and what we're using right now, to be honest with you. Right? You know, Zoom is a great way to be able to do that as well. But, you know, the technology piece, I think, is always going to be a conversation that needs to take place, because when we think about multiple systems that we are all asked to use and trying to streamline them for better efficiency. I mean, the fact of the matter is, as I can remember a time when, you know, I had to be with my grandfather at the hospital. I mean, this was like 30 years ago, right? Before all of these things existed. And the wait time between ER to, you know, a room to ICU, it's just ridiculous. And the statement that you just made, you know, like, it's nice to know who the doctor is on call. Like, it sounds so simple and ludicrous that you somebody would even say that, but it is so true. The complexity of healthcare is really very gigantic, and trying to streamline these things is critical.
And I think we didn't have the patient satisfaction component 30 years ago, right? So you sat in that ER, you waited 6 hours to go somewhere. Nobody asked you after you sat for 6 hours, how was your experience, right? And now, because that's tied to reimbursement, it's a whole dip. There's two sides. There's patient satisfaction and staff satisfaction. And as we all know, you know, staff is dwindling, and it's hard to keep them. And so you have to keep them both happy. And how do you do that? By making both of their experiences better.
Agreed. And, you know, coming from the healthcare recruitment side, you know, the first part is so, I don't think it's ever been truer than it is today. Like the ability to find talent. In fact, I actually want to bring up a certain point here, right? Because I saw your post this morning on LinkedIn, and I had this like beautiful response, but I've only had time to love it. Like that's all that you'll see right now. So I'll get back to it, I promise. But you know, the question that you ask is, you know, and you were asking the audience, like, what is the average age of the nurses on staff today? Yep. And I'm not going to give away the number, but the number is surprising. So if you don't know Allison Morin, please go check her out, follow her, and then answer her question before you move to slide two. But it is it's scary. I mean, it's super scary.
I mean, as recently as this year, McKinsey did a report. 1 in 3 bedside nurses are looking to leave the profession before the end of the year. We already knew that we had a problem, and we're going to be 1.1 million nurses short in 2023. I mean, that impacts you and I. Like, that's not even just our job.
That's us sitting in a hospital, an emergency room.
That is all of us. That impacts all of us. And you know, listening recently to a podcast about talent acquisition and understanding how hard it is and the statistical changes between what 10 years ago, what applicant to fill time looked like and how many applicants we were getting, and to now, it's drying up. We are looking like the lakes in the West. Like there are just nobody who wants to come do it.
Yeah.
So we've got a real problem. So keeping the ones happy and giving them engagement, and then, you know, trying to fill through nursing schools, which are also having a shortage because they don't have enough faculty. There's so many issues in trying to fill those holes for nurses.
So this is a great question for me to ask you, because I've had multiple ideas across my career in terms of trying to identify ways to build up that talent pipeline. You know, all the schools that are accredited do a great job in terms of being able to educate a population that is interested in pursuing that profession. Right. But at the same time, there are limitations in terms of size, in terms of geography, and in terms of class size as well. But I think one of the questions that I always ask is, what alternative solutions can we create for this problem? This is not an issue that is going to be resolved, in the next 5 or 10 years. It's been compounding year after year for at least a decade, specifically, you know, within pharmacy and medical school, and this nursing has, you know, led the pack in that space. What are some alternative solutions that you think companies might need to investigate or create in order to be able to stop, you know, this cataclysmic event that we all see on the horizon?
Yeah, I heard our CNO say that there was 80,000 nurses turned away last year who wanted to go to nursing school, but there weren't faculty to cover them. So, you know, when you think about there aren't enough teachers, and what two professions have been hit the hardest in the last 2.5 years? Healthcare and teachers, yeah. Right? So they're all running away. Technology has to get creative. I think there's got to be the ability to go through nursing school, clinical school in a way that is more hybrid, that is more simulation, you know, that is more self-taught. There's, I also was reading the other day that the Galen College of Nursing is being very smart about how they are helping those who want to come to nursing school. They're helping them with daycare, and they're helping them with, you know, transportation to and from their clinicals. And they're helping them, nurses who say, I want to be a nurse, but these are all my barriers. they are knocking down those barriers. They're figuring out how do we get that student nurse from point A to point B to graduation. And, you know, there's no excuse. We will figure it out. We will bring you food. We will have daycare. We will have the ability for you to learn online. We will, you know, we will accommodate your, you know, your desires to get you through. So being really creative on the academic side, I think, is also something that needs to be thought through. And I'm sure they are. I'm not in that space to know well enough, but, you know, the creativity has to come. We have to find a way to do it.
I would agree. I mean, there were times when I would float ideas with my former employers about, well, why can't we create a program and get accreditation from one of our local schools and actually work with the school that's there to do that? And, you know, I think, you know, the access issue is another big factor, which I think I'm glad that you talked about, right? Daycare, internet access, you know, all of these things that we consider are, you know, utilities of basic living now are not standardized across the country. So I absolutely see companies stepping into the void to be able to provide that as well.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Ali, you've had a really incredible career. You know, I was taking a look at your LinkedIn profile just to capture all of the different elements of your career, having, you know, worked as a registered nurse and then also moving on into different analytical roles. I know that you've been a clinical team leader at Boston Children's Hospital. You've served then on as a clinical informatics manager for Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. And of course, as we've mentioned earlier, your role as a clinical informatics vice president, a vice president of nursing informatics at both Halo Health and now Simpler. You know, when I see that kind of progression and the career advancements, the career steps that you've taken, you know, it's really great to watch that. But I always know that what's on the surface is not as simple as it seems. I'm sure that there are a lot of difficult decisions that need to be made, both personally and professionally, especially when you've established your name and a reputation at an institution to suddenly say no or just leave it behind and move forward. You know, and so moving into your role at Halo Health and now Simpler as a vice president of nursing informatics, you know, from where you were before, like, was that an easy step for you? Was that something that was just felt like a natural fit? Or did you have any reservations, or were there any conversations you needed to have with either professional mentors or personal loved ones to really flesh out, you know, that this role was going to be the right fit for you?
Yeah, you know, so I mentioned earlier that I got tapped on the shoulder to go be, you know, a super user, and then I became a clinical analyst. And then, you know, my story from there went that I got married. My husband lived in Boston. I lived in Cincinnati. And we both were like, well, how are we going to figure out who has to move? So lucky for me, we both looked at jobs at each place. And at that point in time, Boston Children's was getting ready to implement their Cerner EMR. And they were looking to fill their team. So it was a great time for me to get in at Boston Children's. And, you know, I spent 7 years there on the implementation side of the EMR. And then at the, you know, the latter half, beginning the framework and building a nursing informatics team, because my clinical team who had built the EMR were all nurses and they were great. And what they were asking for more professionally, you know, this is great. We're live. We've been live for 2 years. What do I get to do next? And so we were building that framework of a nursing informatics department at Boston Children's. I came back to Cincinnati Children's after that. My family is here in Cincinnati and there's nowhere else I want to be than here. And so I had to step away from such a great organization. But luckily, I live 12 minutes from, you know, one of the other top five children's hospitals in the country. And it was great to go back. It was very welcoming. It was like, you know, I hadn't even left. I got to still work with, you know, many of the people and the mentors who helped me into the you know, informatics space at the outset. And so I really had never intended, honestly, to leave. In my opinion, I was going to work at Cincinnati Children's for the rest of my life. It's a wonderful organization. It takes great care of patients, great care of staff. And the irony is that I was working on my master's in nursing informatics here at Xavier University in Cincinnati, and I had to do a project on secure messaging. I had to write an executive summary on secure messaging. Well, I Googled secure messaging because I didn't even know who was in the space. And lo and behold, there's a company named Doc Halo located about 3.5 miles from Cincinnati Children's office. So I got inquisitive and I thought, who's this company and what are they doing? And so I honestly just like sent my resume to them and said, you know, I'm interested. What do you do? Which that in and of itself for me was scary because I've never done that before. And at the time they didn't have anything that fit for me. And so, you know, cold lead, nothing happened. You know, they responded and said, thanks, but we don't have anything. And about 2 years later, I got a phone call from a recruiter that said, you know, we saw your background and we're interested in you. And I said, funny enough, I'm interested in you too. And I was then, you know, I was 2 years ago. So the conversation started and they, you know, Halo didn't have, they were founded by two oncologists, wonderful story, two oncologists who needed to find the doctors they were working with and find the nurses they were working with. So they started a healthcare, you know, clinical communication company. And that was in 2010 that they started that. And if you think about the other communication platforms in the space, they were the early, you know, the early pioneers. They were out before the other competition, and really everyone else has played catch up ever since, to be honest. But, you know, they were looking for a nurse because they didn't have a nurse. They had two doctors, a lot of developers, you know, great staff, customer care, phenomenal, but really not that clinical voice besides the physicians. And so, you know, we had some dialogue back and forth and they put an offer out. And I thought, you know, this is leaving what I always thought I was going to do. You know, I didn't want to go to the vendor side. You know, that was always, I spent enough time working with EMR vendors and technology vendors to know what frustrated me about them. So, you know, the conversations were, you know, this is a jump. This is a leap of faith. And I've always been blessed at Cincinnati Children's. They said, you know, call me when it doesn't work out. Well, you know, come back a third time, no big deal. But I haven't looked back, honestly. I mean, this space and, you know, software as a service and technology is where healthcare is going and has to go for us to survive and, you know, and really take care of patients in a more effective and efficient way. And I really believe that I serve patients better in this capacity than at the bedside. You know, I miss patient care. I don't miss the politics of patient care. But, you know, if I can be the voice of the voices who are frustrated with healthcare, then I feel like that's my duty and that's what I'm doing.
I think that's a calling for select leaders, Ali. And I'm glad that you shared that on the show, because I think, you know, when I speak with other healthcare professionals, they have a very strong reservation of ever leaving patient care because they feel an obligation, a duty, and that's, I'll call it tunnel vision, because there's still ways that, you know, leaders like yourself can continue to have an impact on patients without having to physically be there and do the lifting and the IVs. Sure. And the monitoring, right? If you are able to see that your voice, your insights, your thoughts, the way that you can creatively solution for problems that are just not being addressed, like that's remarkable. And I'm glad that you had both the foresight and the opportunity, the luck to merge the two together. Ali, one of the things that I always talk about on the show are people that really paved the way for our success. I know that, you know, my knowledge, my skills, my abilities, while they were helpful in many spaces, in and of itself, they were not the ultimate factor in helping me advance my career or have an impact on other people and really be good at what I do. I've had a lot of people that have opened doors for me, taken me under their wing, taught me things, or spoken on my behalf behind closed doors. Is there an individual or two that you'd like to publicly thank for your success on the show? And if so, what was the story that went into you acknowledging their contribution to who you are today?
Oh my gosh, only two. I feel like I have about 15 that I could rattle off. On the personal side, I have to share that my grandmother was an Irish immigrant. She got shipped on a boat at the age of 17. Her mother said, "There's nothing for you in Ireland. Go to America." And so, you know, I come from that. And I think, you know, I feel that there is a lot of her grit and her determination and her, you know, wish for a better future for her in me. And I think that, you know, that personally is who I always think about helped me she was gone long before, you know, I was in any of these roles, unfortunately, but I, you know, I remember her fondly and remember that all the stories of how strong-willed she was and how determined she was. And, you know, so personally, that's my shout out. Professionally, you know, I would have never left the bedside if it weren't for Terry Price, who is the AVP and Chief Nursing Informatics Officer at Cincinnati Children's. She's the one who tapped me on the shoulder. She's the one who saw in me something I never had ever thought I wanted to do or be. And I'm lucky to have had the opportunity to work with her for several years under her. When I came back the second time, we worked more in a peer role where I was, you know, I was more on the patient services side and she was on the IS side, but she's always been a wonderful, she would never let me call her a mentor because she doesn't see herself that way, but I've always really appreciated her guidance and subtle, you know, conversations with me about our professional development. We've kind of both been nursing informatics all along without the formal title until, you know, the last 10 years or so. At Boston Children's, Susan Shaw, who is long retired and will never watch a podcast, but she was the AVP in patient services on the nursing side. And she was, as we were in the throes of implementing the Cerner EMR, you know, she was the one who would put her foot down and say, my nurses are not going to tolerate this. You know, you need to fix this. This is not acceptable. I'm not asking them to do that. Do you understand what patient care looks like? You know, she was very much the one who taught me how to advocate for those bedside clinicians who don't necessarily have a seat at the table. And so I've always appreciated, you know, her way of kind of reminding vendors and reminding those. She sat around the big table with the big dogs and she didn't have any problem saying, we're not doing that for my nurses. This is what we have to do. So those are probably the two most influential people over the history just to get me kind of to where I am. And of course, Jose Barreau, who's our CEO at Halo, he saw something in me that, you know, I didn't see at the time when he invited me to come over and leave Cincinnati Children's and, you know, what a great opportunity he gave me and really enjoyed just working alongside doctor to nurse, you know, really trying to build the platform for all clinicians to work with.
These are very remarkable stories, Ali, and these sound like really good centered people that recognize value and that they have vision in terms of where they need to invest their energies and with whom. So I'm glad that you had those opportunities. I'm glad that you've mentioned the third one too, which I'll let you slide with. So you're okay on that one. I'll let you go with that one. Ali, you've done quite a bit over your career. I'm sure there's an achievement or an accomplishment that really sticks out to you like a feather in your cap where you can think back and says, you know, I've done a lot, but that's really one of the finer points of my career. I'd love for you to either share that with the audience today, or if there's something that's on your professional horizon that you really want to achieve in the next 5 or 7 years, I'd like to know what is on your professional bucket list, if I may.
Oh boy, I don't know that I know what's on my professional bucket list. I think, you know, the being recently acquired by Simplr and now in a much larger organization, I am so excited at the opportunity that I get to help shape the vision for the leading healthcare operations company in the country. And I think what I'm excited about is we talk about our connected enterprise solutions, which is really bringing all of those technologies we talked about at the beginning, you know, provider data management, workforce management, you know, GRC, government risk and compliance, data and analytics, and building a single platform that has all of that and being able to build that, you know, together. And I think that's what I'm really excited about at Simplr is knowing where we're going. It's not going to be tomorrow or next year. But I think, you know, where we're headed is exciting. And I think, you know, professionally for me, I'm excited to be in an organization with other nursing leaders. You know, like I said, I was kind of the nursing leader. I was the nursing leader at Halo, but we are in the process of building a clinical voice at Simpler and identifying and recognizing all the clinicians, you included, to, you know, elevate the clinical voice in the company. And that's probably something I don't know that I'm most proud of, but I'm most excited about, because we've got a chief nursing officer, we've got, you know, physician leadership, we've got myself, we've got, you know, other nursing leaders who have very defined roles in the company. And we are now meeting in a regular cadence. We meet regularly with our CEO to, you know, provide insight and add value and show where the clinical voice can be leveraged. And I think for a software company, we are turning into a healthcare company. And that is, I think that's a really exciting thing. And I think as you think about all the acquisitions, the people who came with them are, of course, the most important. And then bringing those clinicians, you know, bubbling them up and out of their role and saying, I know this is what you do day in and day out, but hey, we need you to also help us build this clinical structure here at Simpler so that we can elevate our own clinicians and bring that clinical voice to all we do.
And Ali, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that, you know, we're talking about a resource group within our organization called CPR, which is Clinical Professionals Resources, right?
Yep.
And let's not forget your honorary title that you were bestowed in your absence, right? Chief Fun Officer, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. And because we're recording, I will say I'm really excited about this new job that I've been given. And I look forward to working with our team on having fun. No, I think it's a great, our CPR group is led by Dee Donatelli and Carlene Kerfoot, and they are taking the charge and gaining the momentum there. But it is fun to, no pun intended, to think about how can we elevate the clinical fun, right, in our company and do things that keep us abreast of healthcare challenges, keep us engaged in our clinical professions, and just get us together and talk about, you know, people's hobbies. We're all working remote. Nobody knows that, you know, somebody down in Tennessee has a goat farm, and there's somebody who teaches yoga, and, you know, somebody else who's, you know, rides a unicycle. I don't know. We've got all kinds of talented people at work and away from work. And it's just fun to kind of build that camaraderie and space for us to be together.
I agree. Now, let me go back one second, because, you know, you mentioned something that really resonated strongly with me, right? One of the reasons why I agreed to become a consultant for Lean Human Capital, which is a subsidiary of Simpler, you know, is the fact that, you know, when you look at Simpler on the surface, right, they're very quick to pronounce and promote themselves as a SaaS, you know, software as a service company. But it's very different than some of the other SaaS organizations and tech companies out there, right? I see Salesforce is, you know, trying to make, you know, a run at this. And there's a lot of other companies that have well-meaning intentions. But, you know, what I felt from the organization today, and I know that this is a plug for Simpler, and I'll make a caveat at the beginning, like, hey, this is just a, you know, a disclaimer that we're both Simpler employees. But I think what's really remarkable is that how Simpler has kind of shifted its perspective. It's not, you know, just, hey, we're a tech company that's trying to be healthcare. It's almost like flipped 180. We are a healthcare company, but, you know, we happen to be tech-based. Yeah. And I think that's the vibe and the culture that I felt from the beginning, which I think is really remarkable. So I'm just super happy to, you know, to be a part of this group. And I see where your perspective is, and for both a personal and a professional perspective. I love that as well, very strongly so.
You know, at Halo, when we would do, you know, sales conversations and sales demos, it landed so well when you would say, we're a clinically founded company. We were founded by two doctors, you know, and that you immediately had credibility. You immediately had them going, you understand what our problems are. I don't even have to tell you because you're a clinician. You get it. And I think when we think about Simpler as a whole and broader, you know, we're just making that story, you know, 10 times bigger because we're building all that clinical knowledge and understanding. And, you know, it's going to just continue to progress us forward and up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ali, what is the size of your team? How many people report to you, and what's your total team size?
You're looking at her.
Got it. So you've got a lot to do.
I do, but I like it that way. You know, it's, I'm an N of one for now. We're looking at how do we scale it? We're, you know, trying to figure out what's the right fill, you know, space that we need to add people to. But, you know, I'm lucky there are other nursing informaticists in the company. There are other board certified nursing informaticists in the company. And so we are, while I am a team of one, we are not an N of one. And it's exciting when we get together and I can pick their brains and vice versa. So we're building that clinical team. And I love that I get to do all the things. I really do. I'm still pulled into Halo sales opportunities to be, you know, the subject matter expert. Like I said, last week I was on site for 4 days at a hospital implementing Halo and Simpler Clinical Communications is the new name. And we, I loved being in a hospital, you know, standing at the threshold of an OR, talking to an anesthesia tech, trying to get them situated and understanding how they leverage the communication tool. It was great to be back. I mean, I get re-energized when I go lives. I really, really do, because talking to peers, talking to nurses, and also just looking at the mess of healthcare, right? So you can't not see what's going on in the four walls from a technology perspective. Just, you know, there's wires everywhere. I was so frustrated because I'm like, oh, where am I supposed to plug this battery pack in? There's just more wires all over the place. There's a way to solve that. That might be my new business, is figuring out the unified battery that everybody can use for all of the devices that they have to carry around. But
hey, I would buy that, Allie.
I think a lot of people would. I was in one nursing unit and there were four types of batteries plugged onto the nurse's desk, onto the station next to the Pyxis machine. I'm like, where do you even put your meds? There's no space. You have all these batteries. Well, there's nowhere else to put them. Anyway. So that's fun. I like doing that. I like doing this product thing, you know, where I'm working on developing, you know, kind of the vision for how the products all connect. I like that I get to do all the things. It's challenging, but it keeps me, you know, wanting to get up every day.
Variety is the spice of life. So right. I completely understand that. Allie, as you look to grow in your role, I know that you've already been doing this for a while, but like any human being, we are always trying to become better at who we are and what we do. And especially as a leader, you know, there's a lot of resources that are available out there, especially thank you to YouTube and TikTok, which is where I find most of my valuable information. I tend to gravitate towards influencers and speakers that have had both proven experience and an ability to articulate, you know, principles that are based and rooted in discipline, as well as success. Is there a book or a video that you typically turn to? And if not one, then maybe a speaker and author that you usually gravitate towards when you think about your own leadership journey and ways that you've grown your leadership style and skills over the course of time.
I am probably not the first to say this, but I love Simon Sinek. He is one of those that I could listen to his 18-minute TED Talk, and I do probably more than I should. It's grainy video. It's old. He's holding a terrible microphone. He is so simple in explaining how easy it is to be a good leader and how easy it is to understand why you do what you do and why you should do what you do. His saying is people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And I think the first time I heard his thing, I was not in a company that sold things. I was at Cincinnati Children's and going through a leadership program there. But, you know, when you think about that, I really like to invest in his books. Start with the Why is the first book. And, you know, they land with me. They're easy for me to relate to. I like his style. I could really listen to him, his podcasts, his TED Talks. If I had more time, I would read more and I would listen to more. That's for sure.
I actually Google him on YouTube and TikTok quite a bit. So he's one of the people that I'll gravitate towards. There's a lot of them out there, but I appreciate you bringing Simon. You're like probably the second person that has brought him up on the show. And you know, to me, that seems like, an underestimation. Like I know a lot of people that do, but so far, apparently most people tend to gravitate towards Brené Brown, which she's fine. She's good.
She's great. She's on hiatus. I don't know if you know, but we're not going to hear from her till September.
I heard something about that and I wasn't quite sure what that was about, but now I know. So I appreciate that as well. Ali, as you said, that you're building out your nursing informatics team. At the same time, you're probably speaking with individuals internally and externally, you know, gauging their personalities, their skill sets, their knowledge. And at some point, they're going to start applying for the jobs that you're creating. And you're going to have to make some decisions based upon what they present, if they are A, worth the hire, or B, worth the promotion. And that requires a certain deftness, D-E-F-T-N-E-S-S, to distinguish what's being presented to you versus the long-term haul. So I always ask my guests, like, what are three qualities or characteristics that you look for in an individual when you're considering them for a spot on your team or for a promotion?
Well, I'm talking to somebody who's in talent acquisition, so this might be a little bit of an awkward answer, but you can assess whether I would be able to hire anybody. How's that?
Don't say I go with my gut. That's the only thing I'm asking you right now.
I don't. You know, I think it sounds silly, but passion, right? You need to have passion. You have to want to do the job. You have to want to have a plan for the next step. You know, I didn't have a plan for my next step in my career, but I appreciate people who have a passion for, I'm doing this with the vision that I want to contribute to or be a part of something bigger or add value here. You know, passion is, I don't think it's always there. I think there are people who have passion and there are people who don't. And I believe that, you know, passion gets you to the next step in wherever you want to go. Grit, I think, is a term that I land with. And I say that because healthcare technology is not for the faint of heart, right? We are in a space that is hard. It is, you know, our old Jose used to say, we're doing really hard things. And when you think about it, healthcare technology, to do it right, is really hard. And you have to have that kind of grit and gumption to say, I'm going to do hard things and I'm going to get through it and I'm going to work harder and I'm going to take my licks and I'm going to keep going because I believe in what I'm going after. You know, the teammates that I had in implementation, both at Halo, Boston Children's and Cincinnati Children's, they raised their hand to go, you know, they ran to the fire. I will say if somebody called and said, I have a problem, the ones who stood up and said, I'll go talk to that nurse who's screaming at me, I've got it. You know, those are the ones that I think make a team dynamic and make a team grow because they, you know, they have that passion. They're willing to raise their hand and say, I have a better idea. I have a different idea, you know, and talk through it. And I think the third is really, I'm going to call it inquiry. You know, they're inquisitive. They're interested. They listen. You know, they sit back and listen, especially to customers, especially to decision makers. You know, we often come to the table with a preconceived answer to all the questions. You know, we know our product, we know the answer, we know your problem, we know your struggle. Here's the answer to all of those things. And I think the better way is to have team members that ask questions and aren't afraid to ask questions and listen. And maybe don't know all the answers and are willing to learn and grow with those kinds of answers. So, you know, those, when I think of the people that I've hired and the ones who have then left me and, you know, left my nest and grown professionally, those are some of the qualities that I have always appreciated about them.
I love how you've described that. And I think that, you know, when I speak with individuals, I find that when somebody's been passed over for an opportunity, it's not that they lacked, that they weren't just a great fit. Like they only had one or two of the three, right? And I think that that's why I ask this question as regularly as I do now, because it having one and being strong in one of these areas is not enough, right? You can be passionate and you can be curious, but if you lack the grit, you're just going to see a lot of starts and stops. Same thing, if you have grit and you have curiosity, but you lack the passion, you're just going to be an automatic, you know, a robot that's going to do what's been, you know, instructed for you, but without any innovation. And I think that that's where, you know, I appreciate you bringing your perspective into this question and sharing that with the listening audience today. Ali, we've talked about a lot of things, both personally, professionally, simpler wise. You know, is there anything that you would want to share with the audience before we end the show that we haven't talked about yet? Any advice or any, you know, information that you think is critical for the listening audience today to either expose themselves to or be more open-minded to in order to either help themselves advance their career or explore new opportunities to make healthcare better?
Yeah, I think, you know, don't be afraid to ask about those opportunities. And this isn't just nursing informatics. I recently had a couple people reach out and say, I'm thinking about going to school for informatics, or I'm thinking about leaving bedside care. What do you think? And, you know, if you're thinking about it, talk to somebody about it, ask the question, learn more about it. You know, there's no harm. The beauty of nursing is you can always go back. You can always go back to the bedside. Like, hey, this didn't work. I'm going to go back to the bedside, or, I'm just going to do this for this one project, see if I like it, and then I'll make a decision. I think, you know, be open-minded, be willing to ask questions about opportunities. There's so many, I'm back to thinking about the staffing crisis that we're in, and, you know, nurse managers who, and I think, you know, nurse and myself included, you know, my first leadership role, I was told, hey, so-and-so's leaving, you're now in charge of this team. I didn't have any experience, right? I didn't go through formal leadership training at that point in time. You know, I failed the first time I was a manager, and I'm not afraid to say it. I've told the story many times. My team actually was like thrilled that I, you know, we had implemented. And then they kind of said, oh, we're restructuring the whole team. And I was out of a leadership role. And they were like, oh, good, because you were terrible at it. And I'm like, oh, please tell me more. Like, and that's how you learn, you know. And I, you know, I will forever remember those conversations with my first team about not being a good leader and a good manager. And I carry all of those stories with me. But I think about nurse managers and, you know, ask the questions before you get. Just because you're a good nurse doesn't mean you're going to be a good manager, right? And I think that that's oftentimes, unfortunately, sometimes how it's correlated. And I think from a clinical perspective, just don't be afraid to ask questions and don't be afraid to say no if it's not the right fit. And you know, ask those questions, talk to those mentors, talk to your peers and see what's right for you. I think I've heard this, and I'm going to shift a minute, but I've heard this a few times over the last couple of years, and it's, you know, I hear fail fast. And I think that it's our human nature to not want to fail. And I am learning that it's okay to fail. You know, do what you can, do what you believe is the best. And if it's wrong, move on and fix it. You know, don't dwell in, I didn't do it well enough. I didn't do this. You know, you learned, you move on. And then I was in an office, I had this sign on the wall above my desk, and it was from Richard Branson. And I think this is one of my favorite quotes. And it says, if someone offers you an opportunity and you're not sure you can do it, say yes and figure out how to do it later. For me professionally, I think that's kind of how my career has been, right? Somebody said, hey, do you want to go become an EMR analyst? I didn't know what I was doing. Sure. Sounds great. I'll figure out how to do it later. Hey, you want to go do a nursing informatics leadership role? Sure. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'll go figure it out. That's one of my favorite thoughts is like, it's okay to say yes and figure it out later. Somebody believes you can do it. You can do it.
Yep. Wise words, Allie. Wise words. Allie, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm so appreciative of the insights and the perspectives that you've brought. You are just a remarkable individual. And as I tell all my guests, as I'm sharing with you today, I am wishing you nothing but success for the remainder of the year. And I'm looking forward to seeing you continue taking healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you, Iqbal. It's a great discussion.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.